You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And Wayne, the big news story, I mean, apart from the market action, which we'll come to in a second, is the reason for that market action, and that is the downgrade by the Fitch Ratings Agency for the US. It's the second time it's happened in history, and it's gone down from AAA to AA+. Now, I look at this and I think, well, the markets just use it as an excuse to take some profit, or rather, just stand aside for a bit after such a terrific recent run. I saw a tweet from you, which maybe, am I allowed to call it a tweet anymore? I saw an X from you earlier
on.
Yeah, I saw an X from you earlier on, and maybe you're taking it a little bit more seriously. Please tell me.
Now, look, right now, it's not a problem. I mean, AAA+, from AAA. I mean, other than a damage to the ego, you know, it in itself isn't a big thing.
Mm.
But it's what the future is going to bring in respect of government debt. Not just in the US, but basically all Western countries. I just don't know enough about the chart debt to make a meaningful comment. But and I'm going to make a quick assumption now,
yes,
that the average maturity of US debt, and let's just talk US, is 10 years. So every 10 years, the debt recycles itself. So since 2010 through to 2 years ago, 2021, so for 11 years, they had abnormally low inflation and abnormally low long-term interest rates. So in other words, they could build up debt at 1% cost. So over that 10-year time period, they replaced all their debt, which was probably costing them on average 4%, with debt that cost them 1%. So in other words, they were spending obviously things roll, so it's not an immediate effect, but they were spending 1/4 on interest compared to what they were spending on interest 10 years previously.
Okay.
So therefore, as with anyone, governments only worry, well, governments in particular, governments are very strange. They write up their books almost on a cash flow basis. So the amount that they were spending on debt was a fraction of what it used to be. So therefore, they took on more debt because there was no impact on their year-to-year expenditure statement because the price of debt had come down so materially. And then, of course, they got COVID. And as we know, the US in particular just handed out free money, and a lot of it, to their citizens, and they could easily afford it at the low interest rates. So as a consequence, over the last 10 years, the debt to GDP, or the debt relative to the size of the economy, has ballooned, massively so. And that's the case in all Western countries because they all experienced more or less the same set of circumstances. Now what's happened is, interest rates have normalized. So let's just say the long bond has gone to 4% from 1%. So therefore, over the next 10 years, their interest bill is going to double, and double, well, it's going to go up 150%. That's what I was talking about in my tweet.
So your ex. So what you're saying is essentially that the successive US governments have been spending too much. They've been profligate in their spending.
Well, in the last 10 years, yes.
Well, maybe even longer than that, 10, 15, 20 years. I don't know one government that has ever reduced its deficit. Can you name me one administration that has reduced its deficit?
No. But prior to that, they couldn't just go crazy, because in essence, the cost of that debt kept it under control.
Okay.
Because, you know, they couldn't run the big deficits, otherwise the market would punish them, or their citizens would punish them, or something would crack. So they've always kept a beady eye on that debt level, because the interest bill each year would have started to negatively affect them. But in the last 10 years, it didn't. It actually gave them a windfall. So their fault, like any government worldwide, is they didn't look longer term. They didn't say debt's going to normalize and we can't take on this extra debt, even though it's so cheap. It's like you and I buying a house. Let's just say interest rates were, let's talk South Africa now.
All right.
Interest rates were 10%. And you go buy a house where you can just afford the 10% installment. Then all of a sudden, they're 15%. And you've either got to make a serious plan and cut back on massive other expenditure, or you got to surrender your house back to the bank. Now, lucky enough, governments aren't in that situation because there is no bank for a government. Well, I suppose the market's the ultimate bank for the government. That's the first thing. But no one's going to phone them and say, hey, you behind, come pay. Well, I suppose the rating agencies do that indirectly. But the point, and their debt matures over a set time period. In other words, they don't pay the new interest rate tomorrow like we do if interest rates go up. They go up as 1/10 matures each year, and they've got to refinance it at the new interest rate pattern. So that's what I was talking about. In other words, it's not today's problem, but over the next 10, 15 years, government debt, well, more correctly, the interest bill on government debt is going to become a major, major issue. And that's the next debt bubble.
Okay, but
lucky enough.
But interest rates are coming down. Interest rates will be coming down because, as you've quite rightly said,
yes,
inflation
but not
is
going
coming down.
To 1%.
No, it's not, maybe not. But I mean, it's what is it? 3% at the moment, the CPI inflation rate, consumer price inflation rate in the United States has come down to 3% from 9%. But it's come down dramatically.
It's going to 3. Mm. Yeah, it's going to 3, but 3 still twice 1 where it was for the previous 10 years. That's the difference. Interest rates, I'm only talking long-term now, not short-term. Long-term rates in America average between 3 and 4%, but for 10 years, they average 1. And a lot of refinancing was done at 1 because it was so cheap that a lot of extra debt was taken on at 1 because it didn't affect your yearly budget because the cost of it was so, it was negligible. I mean, in Germany, they had negative interest rates. So there, it pays you to borrow more because you actually get income. You know, so all major Western countries are going to face over the next 10 or 15 years this problem with government debt. Now, governments are in a very unique position compared to you and I or a business, is that they can just up taxes to pay for the debt. You know, they can cut expenditure in certain areas, not too much. Their ability to cut expenditure is actually quite limited, but they can just tax more. And there's going to be, over the next 10, 15 years, continuous downgrade of government and government debt by the agencies as they start to get squeezed on that interest bill.
Okay, well, the whole situation will unravel soon. And as I've said to a previous commentator, Moody's and Standard & Poor's may follow Fitch. But to me, if I look at a graph of the US debt to GDP ratio, and if I look at the current account deficit, etc., and the amount of money that the US spends versus how much it earns, it just keeps going up and up and up, and it doesn't matter if it's Ronald Reagan or George W. Bush, or if it's Obama or Trump or Biden. The fact is, it just keeps on going. And you get these little blips, and people say, oh, well, we can't carry on like this.
Yeah.
But they do carry on like this.
Yeah. But I mean, just two comments on what you just said. First of all, for the U.S., the current account deficit doesn't matter because they pay it in dollars. So it's like California running a deficit with New York. That's not of relevance to the currency. It's of relevance to the asset base of America, but it's not relative to the valuation of the currency because they settle it in dollars.
Right.
So it doesn't affect the value of the dollars. Of course, if you're running a deficit each year of 50 billion, whatever it is, it means $50 billion worth of assets is leaving your shores and is now owned by someone else. But it doesn't affect the valuation of the currency. The second thing I want to point out is that now I've spent my life going on about 95% of what you see is cyclical. But there are some structural changes that happen. And the one I want to concentrate on now, which I think has reached its end, it started in 1982 with Paul Volcker taking over at the Federal Reserve Bank, and he said, we are going to kill inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that successfully. But it hit an absolute bottom over the last 10 years. So even though the debt to GDP has gone up, for the last 30 years, the cost of financing that debt, with a couple of bumps and a couple of mini cycles in between, has only gone one way. And that's from 12-odd percent, if my memory serves me correctly, to one. So even though the debt to GDP has gone up, the cost of that debt has been declining for 30 years. Now, I think this is one of the structural changes we've seen now. That windfall, that gift to every American government in that they could up their debt because the cost of that debt was in a continuous long-term decline, I think that could be changing now, and this is the change of that particular structural cycle. So in other words, the tailwind they've had of continually declining interest rates for 30 years, 40 years, is now actually a headwind because interest rates could stabilize at this level. And even if they don't go up, if they just stabilize at this level, the cost of that debt doesn't decrease as it has for 40 years. It stays stable. So the ability of governments without the market punishing them to just continuously up their debt levels relative to GDP might be over. And that's why I think the start of this credit derating, I think this is the start. And if governments are not careful, they could end up with virtually, you know, over the next 20 or 30 years, just continuous credit deratings. And of course, there's no difference between AA plus and AAA. It's not going to affect the cost of capital immediately. But when that becomes AA and then single A plus and then single A, the cost of financing that debt will go up because it will be the base rate, which is the long-term interest rate, plus now a risk factor starts to creep in. Now, we were extremely lucky in South Africa in that the risk factor was always there. So when we went from investment grade to junk, I mean, I know our long bonds got down to 7%, but maybe that was abnormally low. But at 10%, it was in the price already. You know, 10, 11% where it is now, it's in the price. So we can get downgraded again or upgraded again. The cost of our debt has remained relatively constant for quite a long time period. Now, we only had the golden years from 2002 through to 2008 on the back of a massive commodity cycle courtesy of China that we actually got our long bonds right down to that 7% level. And remember, at that stage, our government debt was 25% of GDP. It was nothing because there was such windfall on taxes that the government actually couldn't spend the money they earned. So our debt reduced enormously. And of course, now it's doubled and doubled again. But at least the cost of financing that debt has remained relatively constant.
Wayne, what we're seeing at the moment, and I want to talk about short-term markets. I know you're a long-term investor, but what I'm seeing is the S&P 500, it just keeps on creeping lower, down about 1%. The US 10-year bond yield is something like 4.09%. Is this an excuse, as I said earlier on, just to get some money off the table because it's the Northern Hemisphere
today,
summer?
Yes.
Do you think it is?
I think you're right.
I think so, yeah.
I mean, the last couple of months have been magnificent. It's been incredibly strong. It's like, why is the Rand weakening now? It's because it had an incredibly good month and a half, 2 months.
Yes, quite right.
You know, so we're just having a risk off because we've had so much risk on. We're just having a couple of bad days because we had so many good days on the markets.
Okay, thank you. You've comforted me enormously because I've got the JSE Top 40 Index on my delayed screen down 2.2%, which is a big move, but it'll bounce back, as we know. Now, Wayne, I need to talk to you about something. Have you ever heard of something called a hogget? H-O-G-G-E-T.
No.
Hogget.
No,
okay.
Never.
You like lamb, don't you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you get a lamb, and it's lovely and everything, but then you get something called a hogget, which is in between being a lamb and a sheep. So it's not lamb and it's not mutton, but it's 18 months to 2 years old. And it's got all the characteristics of a lamb, but all the depth of flavor of a bit of mutton. And I just ordered a hogget for myself.
I've certainly never heard of a hogget before.
It may be a different terminology in South Africa. But in England,
could very easily be, yes.
Yeah, it's called a hogget. So you go to your butcher and you say, I want a lamb that is 18 months to 2 years old. And as I say, the flavour has become more pronounced. But it's quite a big thing. So you have to order the whole hogget, which I've done, incidentally. I did it today and I was very proud of myself. and I'm going to take the shoulder of it, and then the rest they'll chop up into whatever cuts they are, and I'll put it in the freezer. But that is what I've done, and I'm having a braai on Sunday, because lamb and Sundays go together for me, and I'm going to cook
hogget. Can you have a braai vlees if you're not in South Africa?
Okay, I'll call it a barbecue then. No, I won't have a braai vlees.
Barbecue, that sounds a bit better.
I do apologise for offending your South African sensibilities. I will. I'll have a barbecue, and I'm going to barbecue a shoulder of hogget, and I will report back to you next week about the difference in flavour between the lamb. Yeah, sounds good, doesn't it? The hogget. Mm. I'll send you
the hogget.
Now,
I can't wait to actually get a report back. Now, listen, this last weekend,
yes,
I took the world's biggest rugby fan to rugby at Ellis Park, at Emirates Park, whatever it's called now.
Yeah, yeah.
And we left our house at 11 o'clock in the morning in an Uber, mm-hmm. and we went to the Troyville Hotel.
I love the Troyville Hotel.
And we stayed over at the Troyville Hotel in room number one. The executive suite.
Just before you go on, I know the Troyville Hotel has been tarted up, but I can imagine that the Troyville Hotel is not exactly like the one and only, I would have thought.
No, when we booked the rooms,
yes,
the lady said, "We've got five rooms, mm-hmm. but room number one is our executive suite."
Nothing.
The other four on the same level.
Mm.
And then we made an inquiry as to the differential in price between the rooms 2 to 5 and room one. And they said, room one's quite expensive.
Okay.
It's 850 Rand a night. The other rooms are 650. So we said, we'll take the executive suite.
Of course, nothing too good for the McCurries.
Yeah, yeah. We'll take the executive suite. So then we went for lunch at the Troyville beforehand, and they had a buffet. So they had all the regular stuff there. They had peri-peri chicken liver. They had chorizo. They had peri-peri chicken. They had prawns. They make the most beautiful, or they buy, or whatever, the most beautiful Portuguese rolls you've ever had in your life.
Mm.
Absolutely delicious. Yes. And then for pudding, we had the little natas, which are those little Portuguese tarts with custard in.
Yes, delicious.
Delicious. Absolutely delicious.
So you did yourself proud.
To the rugby.
So you're in. Let me just summarize this now. You're in room one at 860 a night versus the 650 for the plebs. You're having the meal with the peri-peri chicken and the delicious Portuguese rolls and all the other delicious Portuguese delicacies. And then after that, you go off to the rugby to please the world's biggest rugby fan.
Yeah.
What a weekend.
It wasn't a terribly good game. It wasn't a terribly good game, to be honest. We were lucky to win, but let's put that aside.
Yes.
And then afterwards, we went back to the Troyville, and we had dinner. And what they had was, they didn't do, because they were absolute, that you can imagine how packed the dining rooms were there. You couldn't order from the a la carte menu. They just had, so for dinner, they had a choice of two things. Boerewors roll or the Prego roll. So I had the Boerewors roll, which was delicious, with lovely grilled onions with it and a nice piece of Boerewors and nice bread. And then the world's biggest had the Prego roll. And I also had a couple of bites of that with lovely chips. You know, Portuguese chips are the best because they don't buy them from a factory that pushes it through a machine.
Mm.
They're actually hand cut, and they are delicious. And then we had natas again for our pudding. And then we left the next morning. And it was a very, very pleasant experience.
What a lovely experience. Not many people would do that. Not many people would consider going to the Troyville Hotel, going off to what used to be called Ellis Park in, where is it, Fordsburg, and then going back there and having dinner. And it's just fantastic.
The Troyville's only about 200 meters from the rugby. I mean, it's right there.
Exactly. That's the old Johannesburg that I used to like. Anyway,
Wayne. And the Troyville, you know, once you get off the street, because the area is not the best in the world, obviously.
No, it's not.
But it's actually the only negative comment I can make about the Troyville, and it is truly the only negative comment I can make, is that it's almost bordering on upmarket.
Because they've touted it up. They've upgraded it.
It just sneaks in and makes my criteria of a spot or a joint.
Yeah.
So it still is a spot or a joint, but it is teetering on the brink there to becoming, let's call it, for want of another word, very respectable, very upmarket. It's actually very nice inside. Everything's brand new. The place looks good. It's actually very nice.
Okay, well, good. As long as it's just teetering on the brink and it doesn't go full-blown upgraded. And
It mustn't get too upgraded.
No, it mustn't. It definitely mustn't. Wayne?
But the food was excellent.
Good. And you mustn't get too upgraded either, ever. Otherwise, I'll curtail our podcast. That's Wayne McCurry.
No, I don't think I'll ever become too fancy now.
I don't think so. Not like Shapiro. Wayne McCurry
not
is
like Shapiro. Shapiro's quite fancy.
Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNV Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. And that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.